Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only broadcasting icon, Larry King. Thanks for joining us on WTOP.
Thank you. The one and only. Thank you, Jason. Good to be here on my old station. I started in radio in 1958. I broke into Miami, and for 20 years I was in Miami. And then in 1978, the Mutual Network came to me and said, would you like to do a national talk show? And that was unheard of. There was never a network national radio talk show. And I said, I'd sure be interested. It would be all night long. And I was loved radio, was fascinated by the idea. I've done interviews on local radio all my life. And I was fascinated by the idea. And we started to pick up stations. We started, the only big station we had when we started, we had 22 stations when we started. We had Cleveland and we had Miami. So I moved up to Washington from Miami. And here I am in Washington. And not being heard in Washington, but I was heard elsewhere in the country. And then TOP joined us about 6 months in. So I was heard on WTOP for 18 years with my all-night show. And I wound up with 12 stations when I left. Yes. So TOP was part of my, everybody in Washington heard me on TOP.
And now you've come full circle and you're back again.
Back for, here. You're now back it's for, on FM.
Exactly.
TOP is not AM. Well, it's still AM, but it's not TOP, right?
Or is right. it? Right. Well, we have our sister station at 1500 AM, Federal News Radio, and then WTOP is 103.5 FM. So
and Federal News brings the Federal News, right?
Yep. All like, Federal News all the time.
The postman today arrived at.
The postman always rings twice. Is that we run that program on there. Now, what brings you back to town? You're being honored at the museum Wednesday night.
The 18th, right? It's a nice honor. We did a show from the museum. I remember when Alan Newharth, I worked for him for 20 years at USA Today, and he started the museum. It was all his idea. I thought it was a great idea to have the history of news. News has a great history in this country. And to have a museum saluting it was fine, and now they're going to have some of my artifacts from the old days at CNN, some from my new show at Now.
Do you know what artifacts?
I think a piece of the set. They're going to have suspenders and ties and stuff. my microphone, that famous microphone.
The famous suspenders and microphone.
And so tomorrow night is a salute. It's an evening with Larry King. I think I'll be interviewed by Leon Harris and then take questions from the audience, and then we'll have a nice dinner. It's a nice honor. I'm looking forward to it. I've had a lot of, I'm 81 years old. I can't believe I'm 81. I don't feel 81. But when you're 81, when they start calling you an icon and a legend, that means you're old. There's no 28-year-old legend.
Unless you're Orson Welles at 25 or something.
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
Instant legend. Jerry Seinfeld, he credited you with inadvertently creating Twitter. You mentioned your USA Today column.
That's where it started. In USA Today, I did a column every Monday. In Miami, I used to do a column every day for the Miami Herald and then the Miami News. But when I came up here, and Alan Newharth, who had worked at the Herald, who founded USA Today, he called me up and said, why don't you do a once-a-week column for us every Monday? So I wrote a column every Monday. And once a month, I would do It's My Two Cents, which was a takeoff on an old Jimmy Cannon column that was out of New York called Nobody Asked Me But, just a series of one-sentence thoughts. And I do that once a month. And that's what Seinfeld said, started Twitter, because nothing was over 140 or 50 words. And had a lot of fun with it. And now I do it every Sunday night on my Twitter account on at Larry King, at King's Things.
With a hashtag?
With a
My Two Cents or something?
It's My Two Cents. And then I just throw out, if I were doing it right now.
Yeah, give us an example.
There's nothing like the beginning of spring in Washington. Today, I was asked if I wanted red or white onions, which I'd never heard of in my life. Banana is a great name fruit. See, I'm just
hashtag My Two Cents.
My Two Cents.
There you go. You just got a special example.
It's just thrown out opinions, and someone suggested today that with all the years we've been doing this, we ought to compile it into a book. Nice. Just a collection of It's My Two Cents.
Sounds like a good
example.
Idea.
I'm about to sneeze. Now, It's My Two Cents. One of the best feelings in the world is having to sneeze and then sneezing.
Hashtag My Two Cents.
My hashtags, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just had to help you out a little bit. You know what I mean. You good? Do you need a tissue or we're good?
I'm okay. You know, I...
You got the live Larry King sneeze,
when I
guys.
Hosted my own show, I don't think... Yeah, I've sneezed a few times on the air, coughed a few times. I had a cough button. You have a cough button here?
There is one somewhere on this fancy switchboard.
Well, if you had it, you would protect my sneeze. But that was a good thing. See, radio, I've always approached it. I always wanted to do it. And I'll tell you what's the great thing about radio. Of all the mediums, it is the most intimate and the most natural.
Absolutely.
So... I've never seen a person sneeze on television.
Hmm.
You ever see? But why
That's
not?
That's true.
Why not? One night, Brian Williams, just back from the war, anchoring the news. And in the first item today, let's go to Ferguson, Missouri. We never
you
do
never
that.
See that,
my
yeah.
Dad, no,
yeah. But That's true.
Why can't? On radio, it's people listening. They sneeze. Other people sneeze.
It's normal.
Why not sneeze?
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm glad you graced us with your sneeze. A couple months back, I interviewed Dick Cavett. And when he was interviewing someone, to him, the key was not having too much of a prepared list of questions. It was just to kind of listen and go off of what the person was saying. He said it was almost as if Elizabeth Taylor would say, "And then I opened this trunk. You'll never guess what was in it. Oh, so what hobbies do you have?" You know, like when he first started off, he wasn't listening to what she was saying. So he said his best interviews came when he just listened. How did you prepare questions?
I never prepared a question in my life. I've been interviewing people before I got into radio. When I was 9 years old, I'd interview bus drivers. When I went to Dodger games as a kid in New York, I would, my friends wanted autographs. I wanted to wait for the player to come out, ask them questions. So when I started in broadcasting, I never thought about it. I always... listen to the answers. My motto was, I never learned anything when I was talking. Yeah. So if you think about that, I ask short questions, listen to the answers. You have to follow up if you haven't prepared.
Right.
So that was my form. But I never thought of it as a format. And I always thought about being honest. My first day on the air, I told the audience it was my first day on the air. I'd been given a new name. My name was Zeiger. They changed it to King. I told the audience that.
Yeah.
Said, I have a new name. I told him I was nervous.
No pretenses.
No. So then when you do that, you just think about a simplicity. By being on, I have to sneeze, I sneeze.
I love it.
By being honest, you cannot go wrong. You can't make them like you. They're right. Either going to like you or not like
exactly.
You. It's a subjective medium. So just be honest.
Absolutely.
So that I ask my questions. Those are the questions. I don't pre-plan them. I don't know what I'm going to ask. And then I listen to the answer and follow up.
And it flows naturally because of that, I'm sure.
Correct.
You've interviewed everyone from all walks of life. Do you have one interview that you remember being the most starstruck by the person you were interviewing?
Sinatra. Only because as a kid, I'd stand at the New York Paramount wait in line to see him. I think he was the greatest singer of my time. He did not do interviews. Jackie Gleason was a friend of mine, and Jackie Gleason got him for me. And we did a three-hour interview with me, owing Gleason a favor. So Gleason called the favor to do my show.
Nice.
And to sit for 3 hours with Frank Sinatra, I was in awe.
Say no
that.
More.
And then I did his last interview, his last television interview of his life. Mm-hmm. I went to his funeral. But that would be the only time. Now you're awestruck. The first time was in the White House.
Sure.
There's an awestruck thing about that. But once it starts, the truth is, once the light goes on, it's your show. Like,
yeah.
This is your show.
Sure.
You decide what you're going to ask. So once you know that it's a lot about control, if I'm in control, Frank Sinatra isn't in control. The president isn't in control.
Yeah.
The host is in control. Once you know that,
it's an empowering thing.
Nothing to be nervous about.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you mentioned presidents in the White House. I think you've interviewed everyone since, is it Gerald Ford?
Gerald Ford, and I interviewed Nixon, too, but after he left the
White House. After the fact. Which one was the easiest to get to open up, and which one was almost like pulling teeth to get them to open up?
No one was pulling teeth, because no president.
That's true. That's how you get there.
You don't get to be president if you have to pull teeth. The best was Clinton. Mm-hmm. Only because of so articulate he was and so knowledgeable he was about the world. And he knew the vice president of Zimbabwe, you know, and he knew he answered the question you asked. But all the presidents have been interesting, from Nixon, who was dark, foreboding, but interesting. Ford was just a regular guy, and that came through. George H.W. Bush was a great guy. Reagan down home. Mm-hmm. And another thing you realize is they all put their pants on one leg at a time. And so it becomes a question of they're human. And once you start treating them as human, what you try to get into, let's take, what I always try to do in an interview is walk in the other person's shoes.
Or suspenders in this case.
Oh, yeah. You don't walk on suspenders. What's it like to be president?
Right.
And that's where my curiosity would go. What's it like, you know, if the phone rings at 2 a.m.? That's bad news.
Right.
It's not good news.
Right.
It's good news to any it's bad news to any person.
Yeah.
If you're home at home, if you're home alone and your phone rings at 3 a.m., it's probably not good news.
No.
But if you're president, you know it's bad news.
It's true.
Another thing, you're in a business where only 43 others have had it. You run a country, but you don't have a profit and loss, right?
Yeah.
So you don't wait. There's no how many happy days in 4 years do you have? I mean, really.
Probably not that many.
You know, we made a big profit today. Yeah. We sold more pants today.
Yeah.
What a day we had at the restaurant.
Yeah.
You don't have those days.
No.
So most of your day, the reason you get gray hair is, so when I try to walk in those shoes, you try to be, what is it like to be that?
Yeah.
What is it like to know you can reach anyone in the world at any time that you want to?
Yeah.
But the downside of that is you can't control all events, and all events affect you.
Usually the presidencies wind up being defined by something that it wasn't even on their radar when they were running, and it shifts, you know, 9/11.
Get up in the morning and something happens.
Whatever.
That's right.
Yeah. Was there ever an interview along the way? I mean, you mentioned Sinatra as the, you know, the one that, you know, starstruck you the most. Was there ever one that you wish you could take back? A question you wish you had asked somebody? Or?
Well, one of the goofs I made was I interviewed the head of Apple. I'd interviewed Steve Jobs when Apple started.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my first question was, why did you name it Apple? But he was replaced by someone else who became president. Can't think of his name. So I interviewed the president of Apple for 2 hours, taking phone calls. Now he left. This was on TOP and across the country. The first caller said, Larry, you know that he fired Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs hired him and he fired Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
I was embarrassed. I didn't know that, nor did I ask about it. I should have known that. When I first started, I was just a kid. I was 22. I was doing a show at a restaurant in Miami Beach, and a priest came on, and I asked him if he had children. That was it. Pretty humorous. Of course, now that could be.
Right. Is there anyone that you wish you could have interviewed that maybe, you know, had passed away before your career started?
Well, those things, because I never interviewed Humphrey Bogart, never interviewed Clark Gable. I miss Dean Martin. I knew all the Rat Pack very well, miss Dean Martin. But I never got to interview Fidel Castro. I went down to Havana some years ago, and beautiful city, by the way. I'm glad we're opening up relations with them. And came close, met some close advisors, but that didn't come about. Fidel Castro led his country for more years than anybody ever led a country. I would love to have been able to sit down with and question that this man who came down from the hills.
Yeah.
You know, what was it like to be in jail in Havana and then run Havana?
Yeah.
What was that like?
That would have been an interview.
Yeah.
I want to get to your new show. You have several shows. But before we get to that, just what do you remember from your time, from your 25 years with CNN? I mean, you know,
almost
a lot of
26,
people.
26, we did 25. I remember it was revolutionary. Ted Turner hired me. I went on the, my first day was their fifth anniversary. I remembered that I didn't know if I wanted to do it. I had my all-night radio show. I was doing cap hockey, color on caps hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Had to give that up. Had to give up going to Oriole baseball.
Oh, you're a Nose fan.
Well, I was. No, Dodger. I was for Dodgers.
Oh, that's right. Dodgers.
But I left town before the Nationals came. I would have been a National event.
I'm an O's fan. That's why I bring it up.
I go to Dodger games. I'm going to see the O's play Sunday. They're playing in Sarasota.
Oh, nice.
And I'm going to take my son. He's down at baseball camp in high school in Florida. So the first night I was on, Governor Mario Cuomo was the guest. I'm not sure I wanted to do it, so my agent, Bob Wolf, the late Bob Wolf, worked a deal with Ted Turner. 3-year contract. But at the end of 1 year, he had to keep me. But if I was unhappy, I could leave. Pretty good deal.
Yeah.
But I knew the first night, the first 15 minutes with Mario Cuomo, in a little studio in Georgetown, on CNN, which wasn't seen in Washington yet, I knew that show would click.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. And I said, I remember saying on the first break, Mario, this is going to work.
Just a gut feeling you had?
Yeah, and it worked.
Yeah, clearly.
Clearly.
Tell us what you're up to now with your new shows.
Oh, we're doing wonderful things. After I left CNN for a short period of time, I was out of work, and then Carlos Slim of Mexico, who's worth $77 billion. He was a great guy and a friend.
That's it?
And he called me and said, you can't retire. Let's do something together.
Right.
And my wife came up with the idea of Larry King Now, an internet network that I own 20% and Carlos owns 80%. And then we came up with the show Larry King Now and Aura TV. Aura means now in Spanish. And it's also my wife's middle name.
Ah.
So we came up with Larry King Now and hired a big staff, studios in Glendale, California. We have, and then RT licenses our show and they carry it. So we do 2 politicking shows a week and 3 Larry King Now. So I'm doing 5 shows a week. And then I'm doing a podcast with my wife, go back and forth with Sean and Larry King, doing a baseball show for the Dodgers, Time Warner, cable network.
How are they going to be this year?
Dodgers. Well, they look very good. They gave up Ramirez and Kemp, 2 of the best right-handed hitters in baseball. Mm. But they got a good double play combination. They got great pitching. And I think it's a weak National League West. The Padres are a little better. Giants are not a little better. I think the Dodgers should cruise in the West now. Then you come up with the Washington Nationals, who I think might be the best team in baseball.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue that they're not. But there's something about the Nationals that bothers me.
I feel like the last several years people call them, and then they always underperform, yeah.
I don't know what it is. The Dodgers, too,
failed.
The Dodgers haven't been to a World Series since 1988. Man. 27 years, Dodgers.
Do you still follow the Orioles at all from afar?
Oh, yeah. My wish is a Dodger-Oriole World Series.
Why is that?
Because I love both teams. Go 7 games. And the 7th game in Baltimore is snowed out, and there is such a tremendous snowstorm that lasts for days and days and days, and Commissioner Manfred declares a tie World Series.
No, there you go.
We will never play the 7th game, and the Orioles and Dodgers will be declared co-champions.
For the first time ever.
Ever.
The co-champions at Camden Yards.
Right. They couldn't play it out because of the snow. In fact, had you had that this year, you would not have played it out.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned, you said you had a son down in Florida at a baseball game?
I have 3 grown children.
Okay.
And I married a girl much younger than me, and we have 2 sons. Mm-hmm. One just turned 16, and one will be 15 in May. They're both outstanding baseball players. The 16-year-old, Chance King, who's going on 30. He is adventuresome, and he loves baseball since the first day I took him to a Dodger game when he was 3 years old. And he learned a lot of baseball from the Dodgers, got to know all the players. We went to Vero Beach, go to Arizona every year. He was born March 9th, so spring training is his birthday. And he developed a love for baseball, started with T-ball and Little League and all the rest. And then he went to Notre Dame High School in the Valley in California, and he was best pitcher on the freshman team. And then after his first half of his sophomore year at Notre Dame, he'd gone to IMG, that famous sports camp in Florida, every year to summer camp for 2 weeks, and he loved it there. And he wanted to go to school there. Now, he was 15 and a half years old. And my wife said, you're not going to school there. And he said he really wants to go, and he loves the game, and he promised I'll be good now. And she broke down and let him go. And he's now at IMG, so that means he goes to school every day from 8 to 12, plays baseball from 1 to 5, plays doubleheaders. I'm going down there this weekend, plays a doubleheader on Saturday. He's in Bradenton, Florida, and he's never coming back. He'll come back for the summer, but even in the summer coming back, he's going to go to a baseball camp in Los Angeles. Derek Jeter went to IMG.
Okay.
So he lives and breathes the sport of baseball. I spoke to his coach yesterday, and the coach thinks he has all the ability to be a professional ball player, pitcher or third base. Cannon, his younger brother, is on Beverly Hills High School. He's a hell of a ball player, too. He's got more power than his brother. And I don't know where they got this from, but, oh, my wife has athletes on her side. Her brother's played football.
You never played?
Oh, it was the worst. I'm Jewish. We owned the stadium. We watched. No, I was a fan. I was a crazy Dodger fan. I was at Jackie Robinson's first game.
You were at Jackie Robinson's first game?
April 15th, 1947.
Wow. What do you remember from that?
I remember him walking onto the field. I interviewed him twice later.
Yeah.
I remember him walking on the field with that. The Dodgers have the whitest uniform in sport. There's nothing whiter. I don't know what does it, Rinso Blue, whatever they do.
Yeah, so the contrast.
There's nothing whiter. And the contrast of Jackie was a very dark black individual when he came on the field. And we knew we were part of history. We were up in the bleachers, 50 cents. We knew we were part of history. And later when I got to interview him, I mean, Jackie Robinson is just...
Yeah.
When I interviewed Martin Luther King, I introduced him by saying the founder of the civil rights movement. He said, let me correct you. The founder of the civil rights movement is Jackie Robinson.
That's wild.
So the Dodgers were implanted in me, and I always give them credit for that.
What do you recall from the fans that day?
They were all for him.
Hot.
He never had a problem in Brooklyn. That was never hostile.
It was more on the road.
We were all on the road. We wanted a win.
Yeah.
We wanted a win. If this guy could hit, he was rookie of the year.
Yeah.
My God, what a ball player he was.
Unbelievable.
And he led us. We had a 7-game series with the Yankees. He was rookie of the year. He was unbelievable. 2 years later, he was MVP. He was the leader of the team, and we loved him.
You mentioned Martin Luther King saying Jackie Robinson started the civil rights movement. What are your thoughts on, we had a big anniversary for Selma this year, too. Did you follow the walking across the Edmund Pettus Bridge?
I thought that was wonderful. I disliked the movie only because they painted the total wrong picture of Lyndon Johnson. I've read many books on Lyndon Johnson, interviewed Robert Caro, and reading one now by Joe Califano. Lyndon Johnson was totally for the civil rights movement, totally for the voting rights bill, and they had him like an antagonist.
You think it was just done for, you need a dramatic antagonist.
If I'm living and I lived through it and interviewed all the people that were involved, I didn't know Johnson, but all the people.
Yeah.
All the people in that room that they have in the movie where Johnson is saying he's not going to vote. All were there, and all said that never happened.
Wow.
So that bothered me about it. But I was very much into civil rights. When I went down to Miami, I got off the train, and there was a colored water fountain. I drank out of the colored water fountain. I got on the bus to go over to Miami Beach to stay with my uncle, and I sat in the back of the bus, and the bus driver stopped and said, you have to move forward. The back is for Negroes. And I said, my father's Negro.
Oh, wow.
And I stayed in the back of the bus. So I've always been, I never understood prejudice. So we didn't understand. We kids in Brooklyn, why would I know Negroes?
Sure.
In baseball. Well, why not?
Sure.
Seems so basic. Never heard a good reason for prejudice. I've never heard, other than stupidity, I've never heard a good reason to prejudge.
It's taught. You're not born that way. You don't think that way.
You got to be carefully taught. South Pacific. Yep. Got to be taught to hate all the people your relatives hate. You got to be carefully taught. But to me, like, I used to laugh, my white people buy copper tone. Why? My daughter, Kaya, she's now in her 40s. When she was a kid, we sent her to a preschool. And at the preschool was the daughter of a famous black comic, Geraldine. Mm-hmm. Who was that? Oh, I forget his name. I shouldn't forget his name. But anyway, he was a famous black comic.
Okay.
You get to be old, you forget names.
It's okay.
So they went to the beach one day, and my daughter comes home, runs into the bedroom crying. We walk in, and she says, I want to be black. I want to be black. We went to the beach today. Nipsey Russell. Geraldine could swim, and they wouldn't let me because she was blonde and fair. I had to stay under the umbrella. I want to be black. Flip Wilson. Thank you very much, my assistant, Dave.
There it is.
Why did I say
Dynamite dropping.
Flip Wilson. The toughest thing about aging is, as Carl Reiner says, you know what I have? I have short-term memory loss. I have short-term memory loss.
That's pretty good right
That's
there.
My problem
he just
is
said
I have
twice.
He gets it. He's so quick.
That was good.
That was good.
Well, Carl Reiner's a genius. He and Mel Brooks.
He's 92.
Stuff,
he's
man.
An absolute freaking genius.
Absolutely. Absolute genius. What was it? Talk about being in the room with Martin Luther King Jr. Oh, not many people can say they've done that.
Well, it was a great interview, but I had a little more than that. My attorney was a guy named Toby Simon. He's with the American Civil Liberties Union. Martin Luther King was going to try to go to a motel in Tallahassee, Florida. His lawyer was William Kunstler, who was a great lawyer but was not licensed to practice in Florida. So William Kunstler called Toby Simon, my lawyer, and said, listen, Martin Luther King is going up to Tallahassee today. He's got reservations at this motel. They're not going to let him in, but he's going to stand in front and protest. He needs a lawyer there because they're probably going to arrest him. I can't. Would you, Toby, go up? And so Toby said to me, would you like to go? So I went up, and Martin Luther King walks into this motel. It's about maybe 30 rooms, and he says, I have a reservation. And the clerk says, we see your reservation, but we don't take Negroes. He went out to the front of the motel, and he sat on the steps of the motel, blocking the entrance. Mm. So police cars come, and they know they're going to arrest them. Crowds are gathering. And I'm standing there. Martin Luther King is sitting on the steps. Toby Simon, the lawyer, is on the other side. And the owner of the motel walks out. He wasn't mean or anything. He just, the owner comes out, and he looks at Martin Luther King, looks down at him, and says, Dr. King, what do you want? What do you want? And King looked up and could see the white of his eyes and said, my dignity.
Wow. That's a moment.
I froze.
I bet. Goosebumps on that one.
You're not kidding. Living history.
Absolutely. Well, and it's, you know, that's why they're honoring you tonight at the museum. Do you have any, before we go, any idea how they're going to honor you? I mean, artifacts, of course.
I guess they're going to, there'll be a tape goes up. I guess they're going to, Leon Harris of Channel 7 here, he used to work at CNN.
Yeah.
He's going to interview me. We'll take questions from the audience. And then they're going to start, I guess they're going to have a little Larry King space there. A piece of my set and suspenders and stuff. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a nice honor. I've had so many honors and, you know, lifetime achievement from the Emmys, Radio and Hall of Fame, and I Cable Hall of Fame. I pinch myself. I'll tell you the truth. It's really true. I pinch myself every day. I'm just a little Jewish kid from Brooklyn who wanted to be on the radio. That's all I ever wanted to do was be on the radio. I had no idea it'd be a CNN or television or print or books, or movies, and all of that was just, all of this is, sometimes I look at myself and wonder, you know, that kid's got promise. Yeah. I wonder what he's going to be.
Yeah.
I can't fathom all of it. And to hear, to come to WTOP, top of the dial, used to be the top of the dial.
Right.
Now it's just 103.5
still
FM.
Still number one in D.C., though, baby.
Is it? Still number one?
Oh, yeah. Actually, most profitable in the country for the last 4 or 5 years, believe it or not.
TOP Radio?
Yeah.
So they're still stealing.
Our sales
department,
yeah.
Number one station in the country that's on revenue?
Yeah.
You do better than New York and L.A. stations?
Yeah.
Wow. So they're paying you a fortune?
Yeah, I wish.
That's
Larry,
manage-
tell him that. Tell
that's
him.
Management. I used to say management never sleeps. They can't. They're golfing.
Oh, that's a pretty good one. So you could go on a stand-up tour, too.
Oh, I did that, too, 2 years ago. I do a lot
You've
of
done
comedy.
Everything.
The only thing I've never done is a Broadway play.
Is that something you'd like to do?
Yeah, I'd like to do it, but just for a couple months.
A musical or?
Either one, just a Broadway play. Neil Simon play, probably.
Do you have a favorite?
I have so many plays. I love theater.
If you only had one more, if you knew it was your last day on Earth and you could go to one play, what would it be?
Guys and Dolls.
Yeah.
I love
There's
that
There's your
music.
Sinatra again.
But if you'd like what my obituary to say, here's what my obituary should read. Are you ready, David?
Get ready. Here it is. Take
David
the notes.
David Piola is here with me. First line of the obituary. Oldest man who ever lived. Passed away today. Larry King. He was 137. He was shot to death by a jealous husband, found with a 32-year-old former Playboy woman of the year. He died instantly, and it took 6 days to wipe the smile off his face.
Are you coming up with all this right now? Or
right now, that's the way I'm going out, baby.
You heard it right there. Well, hopefully before that happens, hopefully we can come out and check out the museum exhibit. Tonight's the honorary ceremony is for museum members only, but the exhibit will stay up. Hopefully you get to come back maybe and see yourself there at the museum one day.
Always love coming to Washington.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking the time
Thank
to join
you,
us
Great
and
to
offering
be with
the
you.
Sneezes and the hashtag two senses.
You got it.
All right. Thanks. That's Larry King on WTOP.